This is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on the eastern end of Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Last month, farmers, along with environmental and agricultural scientists, met in Riverhead at a conference on the impact of climate on farms and landscapes. The conference was organized by the Cornell Cooperative Extension in partnership with several national and local groups. These included the American Farmland Trust, the Peconic Land Trust, and the Long Island Farm Bureau. The conference held sessions on preparing for extreme weather, weather forecasting and modeling, and the impact of climate change on agriculture on the East End and the Northeast in general. At the conference, I spoke with Becky Weissman of the Cornell Cooperative Extension and Mike Hoffman of the Cornell Institute for Climate Smart Solutions. First up, Becky Weissman.
I'm Becky Weissman, and I coordinate the Agricultural Stewardship Program for Cornell Cooperative Extension in Suffolk County.
So what kinds of services does this program have for local farmers?
The primary focus of the program has always been, for the past 12 years, was when we began the program 12 years ago, is to focus on the leaching of agricultural pesticides and fertilizers into our groundwater. We have a sole source aquifer here, and so we're very cognizant of how our soils are very porous with sand and loam, so that any of us use on top of the water can percolate right down through the soils.
Have you been able to make some changes in the way pesticides and the amount of pesticides that are being applied?
You know, we look at pesticides use as crop protectants. And because we are in a very maritime climate, which has high humidity, we have to be very cognizant of, unlike places in California that are very dry, you can have large organic populations of farms. Here on the island, we have about 13 organic farms. The rest of our farms need some kind of crop protectant because of the humidity levels. But the other thing that we're using is more integrated pest management strategies, which is not only new technology, but using pheromone disruptions to manage pests, and also trapping, scouting of all of our fields. We have so many different varieties of crops that are grown out here, and so our scouting and IPM program is essential. 75% of the farms out here are working with the Agriculture Stewardship Program, and 90% of our growers, at least 90%, are very cognizant and are using stewardship management practices because of our groundwater issues and runoff.
Long Island has some of the highest rates of breast cancer in the nation. Some people have attributed to pesticide use in the past. Is this situation improving?
We could have a long discussion about cancer and related to pesticide issues. I read the New York Times daily and understand that there has been no scientific connection with that, especially here on the island. We do not connect pesticide use with breast cancer on the island. The biggest issue that I think most population in New York and on Long Island need to be more aware of is that pesticides that can be used in all other counties of New York State and in every state of the Union are not allowed for use here on Long Island. Our pesticide use are very, very limited because of our groundwater issues. And we have very high standards of control, and if you buy local here, you buy quality product that is absolutely high standards of crop protectant use and fertilizer use. We do not overapply, nor do farmers are using more and more of the what they call user-friendly, so that it does not impact our bee population. They're very, very cognizant of the issues here on the island.
How is the bee population doing on the island?
It's great. We have a huge orchard industry. We have so many hive. We have people who that is all they do is manage hives on many, many of the farms out here.
Now, this is a conference. I just want to say we're talking with Becky Wiseman of the Cornell Cooperative Extension Service here in Suffolk County. This conference is about agriculture and climate change. Why would farmers on the east end of Long Island need to talk about climate change?
Well, this morning, for instance, we've heard how that even 30 years ago, by this time of the year, November, all of our roadside stands, our farmers markets have been closed because of how it's too frigid. They cannot keep their product from freezing. And as of now, it is 61 degrees, and we're on November the 30th. In 30 years, we have seen a tremendous change in the length of how warm the climate has come through the fall. We are still planting, as of today, cover crops. This is something that has not happened before. Climate is changing on the island. It's hotter. We have more diverse rain events that are incredibly that destroy the crops with our rain.
You mean they're really forceful?
Very forceful.
Really, we're not talking about hurricanes.
Yeah. We're talking about rain events. This past summer, we had a rain event where several farms lost their entire crop because of 6 inches of rain that fell within an hour. We are seeing intense changes in our climate here. And then this morning we discussed how that orchards, because of the temperature varying in the spring, we will have very warm days in the spring, and so the blooms of the orchards start, and then the next day we'll have the freezing temperatures that drop and kill the pollinators and kill the blossoms and destroy the fields. So it is a current, very difficult to believe in many ways. It's like, how can this be happening? We all sort of think, oh my God, it's so beautiful that we're here on, you know, November the 30th, and I can, you know, walk in my sweater and feel so great. But the fact of the matter is that it is absolutely impacting our crops and our growers and our farmers.
Is there also an increase in weeds and pests with the rising temperatures?
Pests are changing. We're seeing pests that have never been here before show up from the south, and they're infiltrating. And one of the speakers this morning spoke of fire blight. As of 2 years ago, we never saw fire blight on Long Island. It's it destroys orchards. And it was a problem that we never encountered. And so we are implementing such things as weather stations that have pest forecasting models. We work with Cornell University to be able to predict pests as they are arriving, but we're constantly having to do scouting and do work directly with farmers, letting them know on a weekly basis what's happening in the orchards, what's happening in the vegetable farms, what's happening in the nurseries as far as what kind of pests we're seeing, because new pests are arriving that have never been here before.
Finally, another question about climate change. As we know, climate global warming brings sea level rise. This is a coastal community. What are some of the hazards that farmers face from sea level rise itself?
As far as I know, I am not the person to discuss that. I'm sure there are others. I don't have anyone on our panel today that is discussing that. I think that would be a great issue that we can look at in the future. I plan to have this conference once a year. This is our first year. And so we're really brought in some really significant people to speak about the changes in climate across, you know, sort of a broad spectrum. And then perhaps next year we can bring it more into the maritime changes within the maritime industry, what we and how that is going to be impacting sea level, the rise in sea level.
I guess one thought in my mind was just the simple issue of saltwater intrusion into the freshwater aquifer as a result of sea level rise.
We have various levels of aquifer. Our very shallowest part of the aquifer is on the North Fork, and our North Fork farmers have to irrigate because they have the sandiest soils. Our soils are different, and it's all formed by the glaciers, but the soils on the North Fork are sandier, and so in severe drought conditions, they cannot irrigate. And so we also live in a very wealthy area population. So we're surrounded by mansions, and those mansions are watering their lawns profusely. And so the kind of irrigation that's being used on both the North and South Forks by farmers, but also by our golf courses and by our homeowners and by just the extreme wealth that we have. There are certain areas that there has been some saltwater intrusion. However, it's monitored, and most of our actually homeowners are connected to county water systems. So it's, as of right now, it's a tiny problem, but we always have to watch for that.
So you're saying that actually overuse of water by non-agricultural resources coupled with potential rising sea level in a shallow aquifer is what could cause a real issue maybe in the future with saltwater intrusion?
Well, I think it's a really complicated, you know, issue as far as the aquifers are concerned and how they're replenished. I'm not the expert to be able to speak to that, but I do know that homeowners, farmers, landowners depend on irrigation to grow crops. We have to have water to grow crops.
Well, that's great. I want to thank you so much for talking with Sustainable East End.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure having you.
You heard my conversation with Becky Weissman of the Cornell Cooperative Extension, recorded last month at the Conference on the Impact of Climate on Farms and Landscape. This is Sustainable East End on WPKN Radio. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Next, I spoke with Mike Hoffman of the Cornell Institute for Climate Smart Solutions.
My name is Mike Hoffman. I'm Executive Director of the Cornell Institute for Climate Smart Solutions.
Tell us a little bit about the Institute and what it does.
Sure. One of our main goals is to help raise the profile of climate change and what it means, in particular to agriculture in the state of New York and the region. We have more extreme weather, more likelihood of droughts, more pest. So we're trying to raise the awareness for everyone. We all eat, so it's important, but in particular, those who produce our food. We also are developing new tools because the world has changed now. I often say agriculture is no longer business as usual. So there's an increased risk of frost. So with researchers, we have developed new tools to help warn frost. Like, you know, in 2012, apple growers lost most of their crop in New York because it got warm and then it returned to winter conditions. And that happened this last year in parts of the Hudson Valley. So it's a tool to bring those producers in today's conditions. Another tool, which unfortunately came out a little late, is actually a drought tool. It's really a water deficit tool. It measures It predicts when a crop or a plant is going to be under severe stress because of lack of water, lack of soil moisture, higher temperatures, all those things combined. So the next time around when we have a drought, this will be or stressful conditions, a very valuable tool to have. And we also have one, there's a new one on growing degree days, because historically those models are based on 30-year averages. Well, those 30 years are different. So now it's a 15-year average because everything is warmer and it's updated every year. So it's like a rolling 15 years rather than trying to refer back like how it used to be, because it's not like that anymore.
And when you say tools, these are actually things that you put in the ground by the plants?
They're actually decision tools. They're on a computer, and you go there, and any one of these, you put in a location, you know, where is your farm, for example, and the soil moisture one, what kind of soil do you have, and what kind of crop you're growing, and that'll give an estimate of water deficit when that crop is under stress.
Now, one of the things I'm aware of that is an issue with climate change is just simply, you know, and I think you've already pointed this out, that there's kind of a climate chaos, that the predictability of events, it's not just that things are warmer, but that they can get warm and cold. I wonder if you could address that. I mean, isn't unpredictability the real enemy of the farmer?
Yeah, they're already dealing with enough variability and risk, so it's only going to get worse with a changing climate, so there'll be more extremes. In the Northeast, we're already experiencing a 72% increase in downpours, I'll call them. It's like 1 inch of rain in 24 hours. That's a big deal, yeah, because the rain now comes in more downpours with intermittent dry periods, which also means maybe, depending on your crop, you may want to consider irrigation just for those gaps in those kind of conditions. And again, the surprise warming early on and then the return of winter or frost, yeah, there's just much more variability, and with that comes more risk for those who grow our food.
And what about the kind of crops that people are growing? Are they changing?
I think, yes. Farmers are researching all the time. They're always looking for better ways, new ways of doing things. We can grow canola now in northern New York. We could not do that in the 90s. Farmers are doing more double cropping, putting something overwintering and then harvesting and then putting another crop in the spring because it's a longer season. Field crops growers, some are putting longer season corn in the ground, but we have a longer season, but it's also more variable. As we heard earlier today, it may be warm for a while, and then it'll get cold and wet. So actually what some field corn farmers are doing is they put an early season, long season corn in that they know will have plenty of time to mature, then they'll wait, and then they'll come back with a shorter season corn to finish off the rest of their acreage so that come the fall, they're better assured of a crop. So lots of changes are occurring. And also bear in mind that, you know, the number of crops we grow is really limited. Look at what's possible worldwide. You know, we should be thinking about whole new crops too, growing under these new conditions.
Could you say a little bit more about that? You have some examples?
Well, I know in Canada they switched to some new oilseed crops. Actually, they're derived from Africa because they can do it now. And those are that's what I'm trying to say is it's time to start experimenting with some of these different crops at that scale. And let's just look in Salinas Valley in California, where the temperatures are increasing. They're going to have to ultimately switch to more heat-tolerant lettuce types. If we go global, saltwater intrusion is a big deal in, say, the Mekong Delta in Vietnam. So they have to have more salt-tolerant rice varieties to grow a crop.
Well, that's interesting because, of course, we're here in a maritime area where the sea level is rising. Is there some concern over saltwater intrusion? And if so, how could farmers deal with it?
I'm not really sure with sea level rise in this part of the world and what that means to saltwater intrusion. My mention of the Mekong is the whole Mekong. It's a vast area with 17 million people is 5 feet above sea level. And, you know, they're dependent on precipitation and they're also experiencing a drought. So back to that example, they're actually switching to shrimp because shrimp can tolerate salty water, but even sometimes the water is too salty for shrimp, so they'll dilute it with fresh water. So they'll have multiple ponds, one that catches rainwater, one that's salty for the shrimp, and then if the shrimp water gets too salty, they'll just add some fresh water to bring it down.
So we are seeing, or you are saying, we're seeing impacts already from climate change. We're less than a degree warmer than pre-industrial levels. Seems like we're headed for more than 2 degrees, possibly 3, 4, even 5 degrees of warming by the end of the century. What is going to happen to agriculture? Can agriculture adapt?
We could make major strides in helping those who grow our food adapt. New varieties, longer seasons, as I mentioned already, salt tolerant, heat tolerant. So there's options there. Agriculture will shift. In the U.S., the Southwest is going to get drier and drier and drier, as is the West, as well as the central part of the country. Interestingly enough, in the Northeast, we will have adequate water. So can we, in fact, expand and intensify and diversify what we grow here? We also have 22% of the U.S. population at our table, so to speak. Some of us think that there's an opportunity there that we really need to work on. And yes, we only grow 6% of the food in the U.S. right now, but with longer seasons, adequate water, markets, price of food potentially going up elsewhere, we could become very competitive. And, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, this was the vegetable basket of the U.S. So I think we have a long ways to go. But, yeah, food production will shift, and I'm only talking about the U.S. Mm-hmm. When you think of sub-Saharan Africa and Middle East and so on, there's going to be huge changes and stresses on the global food system.
What is the impact of climate change on soils themselves? Does it impact the fertility of the soil? So that's part one, and then I have another follow-up.
Well, I think as far as climate's effect on soils, let's just say first, because in this part of the world, with increasing downpours, there's more runoff and nutrient loss, so that's affecting the soil. At the same time, the higher temperatures may also be reducing the amount, the ability of the soil to retain carbon. But on the flip side, soil is actually key, could be really important to help mitigating climate change because it stores carbon. So soil health is absolutely critical. Good and best management practice on soil is really key to this big question. If soil has adequate organic matter, then when it does rain, that rain will penetrate. And then if you have a dry spell, because you have plenty of organic matter, it'll retain moisture. So your crop will be far less stressed on a really healthy soil than on one that's been abused.
I read an article by George Monbiot, the British environmentalist, last week that soil health is being severely degraded by our agricultural practices. In fact, he advocated no-till agriculture. Do you think that that's going to become more important in a time of climate change?
I think it's already happening. There's a lot of no-till in the Midwest and elsewhere. If we're just speaking of the U.S., sure. And there's also some both ecological benefits and economic benefits of no-till agriculture. And I think we heard here today even more cover crops are going in. That's also really key. So you're growing a green manure, you're turning that in, that's helping establish, maintain the carbon level in the soil and help soil health.
So is there anything that I haven't mentioned that you think is a really important thing for farmers here on the East End to know about climate change?
Well, I think, and what we're hearing today is everybody's accepting the fact that the climate is changing. I would urge everyone, farmers and those who eat what they grow, to become aware of the challenges and the changes that are occurring. This is, I always say, an all-hands-on-deck challenge. We're all part of the reason that the climate is changing. We're part of the solution. And also, bear in mind, globally, there's huge changes, and that we also should be cognizant of that. Things like coffee, vanilla, cocoa, really important things, and wine, are changing.
Changing how?
Well, let's just take saffron. I think it's the most expensive spice in the world. Most is grown in Iran, but some is grown in Kashmir and India. Well, changing in precipitation patterns, it's getting drier and higher temperature, is putting thousands of farmers out of business and all the distributors. It's having a huge impact, let alone, you know, I haven't seen it yet. Not that I buy a lot of saffron, but I suspect the price will go up at some point.
And coffee is under threat. Vanilla?
Vanilla, grown on the west coast of Madagascar, production's moving inland because of more storms. They can still grow it, but now there's an increase in transportation cost. Cocoa, grown in western Africa, there's all kinds of issues, including labor and so on. So that probably going to move to Central and South America. And coffee, yes. Some types have gone up 300% in price because of it's very sensitive to temperature change. And I just happened to be in Costa Rica a few years ago walking through coffee plantations, and the farmers were telling me, it's getting hotter and hotter. So what they can do is move to a higher altitude, but they quickly run out of hills. You know, there's only so many places you can move up. Vietnam is the second largest producer of coffee in the world. Same thing's happening there. The higher temperatures are stressful. And there's also an insect called the coffee borer, which is spreading worldwide. It's a real difficult pest to control, and in part that spread is associated with a changing climate.
Well, I guess that's all the questions I have. Is there anything that I might have missed that you'd like to tell our listeners?
Well, there's one angle we haven't touched. Climate change is personal. Think about someone younger than yourself when you think about climate change, because they're the ones who will see the full brunt of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael Hoffman. This is Sustainable East End. We heard interviews with Becky Weissman of the Cornell Cooperative Extension and Mike Hoffman of the Cornell Institute for Climate Smart Solutions. It was recorded last month at the conference on the impact of climate on farms and landscapes, organized by the Cornell Cooperative Extension in association with local and national farm groups. Sustainable East End programs are archived at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Look for updates there about today's topics. The program is produced by Tony Ernst and me, Francesca Rhiannon.